Looking to stand out from the pack at your first job? When you earn a master's in management from Georgetown, you'll gain the skills employers value most, elevating your career prospects for years to come. Get started at choosegeorgetown.com/MIM.
Welcome to the Smart Driving Cars Podcast. I'm Fred Fishkin, along with the Faculty Chair of Autonomous Vehicle Engineering at Princeton University, Alan Kornhauser. Hi again, Alan.
Good afternoon, Fred.
It is a good afternoon. Joining us this week is a Princeton alum who has had a tremendous impact on automotive safety around the world, starting with his 1965 book, Unsafe at Any Speed. Ralph Nader, thank you for taking the time to join us.
Oh, it's a welcome. Thank you. It's a privilege.
Great to have you.
Ralph, you've been outspoken this year about a bill in Congress designed to speed up adoption of self-driving cars. There's still a last-minute push to get it passed this year, but you've been among those saying, not so fast.
Yeah, it's sort of a strange role for me because my criticism years ago of the auto companies was their technological stagnation and that they weren't moving fast enough for crash protection and operational safety, whether it's tires, handling, vehicle dynamics, and of course, seat belts, rollover protection, side protection. And now I'm in a position where I'm saying, you're going too fast. And it's not just the auto companies in Detroit. There's a frenzied dynamic with companies in California and Silicon Valley, Pittsburgh. And what my criticism is that, first of all, it's a huge diversion away from modern public mass transit. You've been teaching a long time, Alan, and you probably know about the proposal by the transportation section of Northwestern University, what they called personal public transit, where people would hook into a vehicle on a line, a monorail, and unhook. That never went anywhere because our mass transit priorities have always been subordinated to personal transportation. But what is happening now is happening in a terribly precarious vacuum. Congress no longer has a Office of Technology Assessment, and so members of Congress on many technological fronts are not getting the advice that a sober OTA gave them until Newt Gingrich suspended it in 1994. And we have companies competing for the imprint of modernism in the business pages, who's first, who's going to put more vehicles on, what kind of vehicles, when. There is this frenzy going on with claims that are not supported by data that is publicly available and peer-reviewed. And so as a result, we have claims that are way beyond any kind of public verification, and the Department of Transportation is not requiring the submission of the database. A recent head of NHTSA, when I asked him, I think it was a little over 2 years ago, what would you do if a reporter asked you about self-driving cars? What would your response be? And he said, no data, meaning no public data. There will be whistleblowers. There will be internal memos leaked from Uber and Waymo and GM and Ford, indicating that they were fully aware of the hazards of premature testing on public highways, among other things. So the bill itself is almost can be characterized as get the federal government off our backs bill. It's almost laughable in terms of its advisory language instead of having mandatory performance standards based on open peer-reviewed data with adequate technical budgets for NHTSA for continuing research, inspections, and tested ways of ensuring public safety. So there's a lot more to say about this bill, and the advocates for highway and auto safety have had their say, that's backed up by the casualty insurance industry. They don't even have the information which to develop insurance rates for these vehicles. So, I mean, from an academic point of view, they're not substantiating their claims, and they're not making the case for slow it down. In other words, there are semi-autonomous systems that are very good, semi-autonomous brakes. NHTSA needs to standardize those more, and I don't think there's much quibbling with that. But for the whole and self-driving, you have economic repercussions, putting truck drivers out of work. But above all, you have premature deployment, if it's permitted, mixing with, of course, a much greater fleet of driver-controlled cars. And the industry itself is jeopardizing public trust. I mean, if they have some bad crashes and they go too fast, people who really like to control their vehicle, psychologically embedded in the American psyche, if they lose the public trust, you can say goodbye to driverless vehicles for a long time.
Yes, and I think I agree with you on so many of those points. I spent at least 40 years of my life dealing with something called personal rapid transit, which was your initial comment of little vehicles out there. So, you know, but of course that never happened because you had to build the infrastructure, and the gargantuan cost of the infrastructure. There was just no money to do that, and there wasn't a way to get started. So of course all of this new evolution came out of the thought, well, maybe we can put enough intelligence in each individual vehicle so that it can take care of itself and not crash. And that's been basically the focus over the last almost 15 years is to get to that point. But as you mentioned, there's a lot of misunderstanding out there as to what the technology is and what it can do and what it can do at various points. You know, I like to point out that there are safe driving vehicles. In other words, we can put technology in the vehicle that will not only do crash mitigation as has been done up to this point, but also do the crash avoidance. But that requires NHTSA to really focus on the automated emergency braking systems and have them really work, as opposed to just sort of work. But instead of really focusing on that, they've got, then there's this whole business, oh, well, my goodness, it can drive me. But, you know, driving me so that I don't do anything, or in fact coming to me and allowing me to ride without anybody in it, is a whole different business in some sense, a whole different, in some sense, technology or even reach to be able to do that than to just do the safety piece of not having these vehicles crash. And there's so much misunderstanding out there in terms of what anybody's talking about we have real problems and we need better direction coming from the federal government and to help
well,
us.
Well, one thing I came across a quote by CEO Bill Ford of Ford Motor Company where he said, yes, it's really important we get it right rather than get it quickly. That was echoed by the Toyota Research Institute CEO Gil Pratt, who said, quote, things are changing rapidly, but this will be a long journey, end quote. Yeah, I mean, look at all the questions that need to be answered. What about the highway adaptations, driverless cars? There's very little comment in the public press on that. I attended a Deloitte conference on this subject a while back, and the one subject that no one wanted to talk about was hacking, both hacking by the auto company like VW, which you mentioned, or hacking by nefarious other extraneous actors. And they don't want to talk about it. Well, the reason why they don't want to talk about it, I think, is because they don't have a defense against it. And as you know, the number of computer lines in a self-driving vehicle are enormous. And to me, that's the one biggest slowdown argument against self-driving cars is the hacking, which would terrify motorists. You know, I mean, they have trouble enough controlling their computer on wheels now. And if they think that they're going to be tootling along and someone's going to stop the brake or, and you know, there was an auto dealer some years ago who switched off a late paying used car owner. He missed his payments by noon on a day, and then he was on the highway, suddenly couldn't move. So the hacking, what would you say about the hacking problem?
Well, there is the fundamental hacking problem. There is also in the AI portion of this, this is possible of an adversarial attack. The adversarial attacks are just like with respect to our own image processing that we do. Sometimes we get confused. There are illusions that are well known. And the part of the issue, at least currently within, you know, the research community, has to do with well, what happens if you somehow just change the image a little bit, or as some have shown, if you put just a little bit of tape on a stop sign, you know, somebody's suggesting that it's recognized as a yield sign as opposed to a stop sign. So, yeah. I mean, that's a whole, you know, other aspect of this that, of course, you know, we all need, there's an enormous amount of work that we all need to do. It's, I think, very good that we're moving in this direction. I think it's good for mass transit because I look especially at the driverless piece as it being a shared ride transportation. It's not that we would own them. It's that they would be vehicles managed by, it could be New Jersey Transit in New Jersey. I mean, if they got their act together, who would then provide these mobility providers on a shared basis to provide mobility for people that don't have it, that don't have bus service, that and provide it in a shared way. So in fact, it enhances mass transit rather than reducing it. It doesn't take you to New York on the Northeast Corridor. It doesn't replicate the New York City subway. But out here, you know, in Princeton or in, you know, where most of the country lives, you know, what you need is something that's going to take two or three people between the same. To the same place at about the same time, as opposed to a 50-passenger bus. So these things could do that, but they have to do it safely, which is where you come in. I mean, you've been you're the leader of the safety movement. And as Bill Ford said, we've got to do it right, not fast.
And you know what we see in Washington is the focus is so much on driverless cars now in the Department of Transportation. There's a report about to come out from the National Transportation Safety Board that I think the industry has to pay close attention to. It's the first one on the accidents that have occurred. And but, you know, you hear very little about some long overdue upgrades of traditional crashworthiness and operational safety. And there's a backlog. And the Department of Transportation under the present leadership has very little interest in upgrading these kinds of things. As you know, the collision impact standard is pretty obsolete. And all of these things have to be upgraded, and they're not paying attention to that. It's really a strange thing. Is that when you look at the business page, it's like 90% of coverage of the auto industry is now driverless cars. Until recently, when GM just announced closing five plants. But don't you think it's in need of a rigorous public process? And by that I mean university engineering departments. I mean the Department of Transportation. I mean good congressional hearings. I mean a real thorough technology assessment. I mean, I've talked to truck drivers who are just terrified when they hear that the first self-driving vehicles are going to be trucks on rural interstates, and it's just terrifying.
Well, I agree with you. I think the technology should be, in other words, the automated emergency braking systems should not allow you to hit anything that's ahead. I mean, my goodness, we should have that's got to work before you take anybody out of the cab. We can't have Teslas running into parked fire trucks. We can't have Joshua Brown in Florida just because a truck crosses the lane in front of them. The brakes never come on. We're not getting the fundamentals of this. Why? Because if you look at the crash of Uber in Arizona, they turned off the automated emergency braking system. Why? Because it got false alarms, and the false alarms would turn on the brakes when they brakes shouldn't be turned on, and therefore that reduced the ride comfort. So to have ride comfort, they turned the thing off so it wouldn't do that. But guess what? When there's finally a wolf there, it doesn't apply the brakes. Oh my goodness, we can't get this right.
Yeah, well, that's one of the holes in the Senate bill, is that it doesn't have requirements to assure proper vision by a vehicle driven by computers. In adverse weather, like fog, snow, unclear highway markings, lines, directional signals, that's going to take billions of dollars to upgrade.
Right. But, I say that, if there's so much snow that there are no lines, you shouldn't be out there in the first place. Get the thing plowed. We shouldn't be driving in fog. I mean, we're not doing this so that we can drive in fog. We're doing this so that when it's nice and clear and whatever, we can provide mobility to people and people don't die. I mean, let's get that piece done right and then move on. Let's put clear lane markings out there and good paint and not let the car go out of the lane. Let's get those things right. And what that does for the truck driver is that improves the quality of life of the truck driver. That allows the truck driver to live longer. That's good for the truck driver. That doesn't pull the truck driver out of there. Maybe the federal government will let the truck driver go out there, and if he or she doesn't have to do as much work, might let them work an extra hour a day, because that doesn't add more risk to the system and allow them to better feed their families. That's a better way to go than all of a sudden say, hey, we're going to unemploy this person and throw them in the trash heap.
You have to deal with one of the most powerful lobbies in Washington, the American Trucking Association, the employers.
But let's deal with them. I mean, you dealt with GM. Those guys are easy, aren't they? Come on. Come on, Ralph.
With the Congress we have, it's almost impossible to deal with the trucking lobby. But the best autonomous vehicles, in my view, is mass transit, personalized and mass. The technology is way ahead of public policy, as you know, and that's what we need to invest in. That we have hugely underinvested in public transit. Even the traditional type is breaking up and obsolete, and look at the train problems in the East Coast, for example. So the problem is this is never discussed in elections. It's never part of the deliberate democracy that we need, where candidates, engage. It's almost like a subject's never mentioned. You notice that on the debates? Never mentioned.
I don't want to go there because I'm so depressed. So I don't. But you're absolutely correct. I mean, you're absolutely correct. And this is an important problem. It's an important part of our lives. It's an important part of the lives of us that have access to mobility of a car that we can drive. But if you look at the people that are, economically challenged, I mean, they can't get to a $15 an hour job at an Amazon a facility in Robbinsville here. It takes them an hour and a half to get there. I mean, it's terrible because we don't have a system to provide them mobility. So I looked at these systems. That's where I would like to see these systems go, is provide that mobility first, and then, you know, do the rest, and provide it in a shared basis. So it really is, it's not mass transit. It's with a little M. There are 2, 3, 4 people in the vehicle. It's like we use elevators.
Ralph, tell us what your thoughts are about what Waymo has been doing and what role the government should be playing that perhaps they aren't.
Well, as you know, they have this bill would allow unlimited number of vehicles to be tested on roadways. And actually, it was allowed and buried in the authorization bill in 2014 for the Department of Transportation. So it's all you got to do is look at the short picture here. There are going to be more crashes, heaven forbid, and each casualty is going to get 100 times more publicity than the current casualties on the highway. Why? Because it connects with fear by motorists of losing control of their vehicle. It connects with pedestrians who wonder if, when they cross and the cars are all stopped, whether one of them doesn't stop and plows into the pedestrian. So unless they deal with that anxiety, fear, and dread by motorists, some of it empirically based, some of it, you know, maybe not, they're not going to get anywhere. But they don't look at this. They're all in this frenzy. These 6, 7, 8, 10 companies are in a frenzy. Who is going to be viewed as first in the media? Who is going to be viewed as first to get whatever privileges they can get in any kind of legislation? I mean, you know, the legislation didn't even provide a budget for the Department of Transportation to hire experts in autonomous vehicles and create a technical capability. You know, if you can't do that, you can't regulate rationally.
Absolutely. I mean, that's really part of the problem here is assume that, if we assume that the industry is doing this correctly, all the intelligence is within the industry, and poor Federal Department of Transportation and NHTSA, I mean, they're struggling to do what they had been doing, and they can't do that. They have essentially zero capability to address this.
Right. And what's going to happen is there's going to be all kind of cross when the pressure gets on. The companies will start blaming each other. They'll start saying things behind their back. Things will get leaked. There'll be more anxiety and more secrecy. I mean, when you hear some of the claims that these companies make, like Waymo and so forth, you say, all right, please provide the data. So experts at Princeton and NHTSA and elsewhere, wherever, can look at it. Oh, no, it's proprietary. You have to go to these technical meetings to realize that the one looming fear by this industry is they don't have defenses against hacking. All kinds of hacking, authorized, unauthorized upgrades by the motor vehicle company that sells you the car, and all kinds of freelance hacking. And, you know, you hear wild claims, which I hope you can either verify or reject, Alan. And I heard one claim whereby a sophisticated hacking operation can hack an entire model, say, of Toyota. That is like 500,000 cars that are on the highway at the same time. Is this possible?
Well, hey, if it's the same communications channel they've all been mass produced, guess what? They're all correlated. And if you find the thing that basically attacks one, it attacks them all because they're all the same. They're all correlated. They've all been replicated. I mean, that's the fear of all this.
And all these cars can suddenly go off the highway or stall in traffic,
or whatever. Yes, there are those. I, you know, there's no proof that you can't do that. I guess is the right way to put that.
Ralph, you know, go ahead, Ralph.
It's a problem. Let me interject this. It's a problem we had with the internal combustion engine, where the technology outstripped the science. And it took Arlie Hagen-Schmidt at Caltech in the 1960s to connect the internal combustion engine with photochemical smog. So for over half a century, it took the science, which should be the governing discipline of technology,
right.
It took them half a century to make that connection, while during 50 years, people were breathing all these noxious emissions and property was being corroded by them as well. And I'm afraid this is happening here. The technology is outracing the science that publicly I'm talking about. The technology is outracing the science that must be its governing discipline.
Ralph, let me get you to comment on this. We often have this debate on the podcast. Why aren't pressures from the marketplace and public perception and even stock prices enough to ensure that these manufacturers, the Waymos, et cetera, are going to do this right?
Well, number one, you'll notice until it was dropped by pressure, the Senate bill and the House bill shielded these companies from product liability litigation. Now that's being revised downward. They haven't yet solved it, but trial lawyers, consumer groups are really all over senators on that one, with the help of Senator Blumenthal and Senator Markey. So that's one. And that is an important check. Nobody likes to be sued, but we don't like to live in a country where nobody can be sued. So there's that paradox. But the lawyers in these companies, if they think the company's going to be sued for crossing the line recklessly with some technological risk pattern, they will say to the technologists, which filter up to the CEOs, you're going to be subjected to a very serious product liability suit. You have to disclose all kinds of information you don't want to disclose, and it may actually turn into a class action. So that's one check. The stock market, unfortunately, is just the reverse. The high-flying stocks like NVIDIA, which went from $13 to $270, it's down now a bit. Why? It's because they're connected with technology affiliated with the forthcoming boom in self-driving cars. So the market, the stock market, has not rendered its verdict. The motorists, of course, haven't had a chance because there aren't many cars yet, but that's where the rebuff risk is greatest. That is really where the rebuff risk greatest, because of this deep set belief that I want to control my car, and I don't want some extraneous provocations and penetrations to do what I don't want to do with my car. I mean, that, and it doesn't take many crashes and fatalities to convey that, because of the wide publicity that these crashes are being given. And one reason for the publicity is because the braggadocio of the industry is, hey, you know, nobody's going to get killed. Self-driving car doesn't get drunk, doesn't fall asleep at the wheel, doesn't get distracted with a cell phone. So they can, as the lawyers say, they can be hoisted by their own petard here.
Yes, but I guess my belief is that the technology can deliver the car that rarely crashes. I mean, rarely. If we can't, then we shouldn't be doing any of this. Okay.
Yeah.
If that's not what we're driving at, then we should forget about it. We should, you know, continue with, you know, fins and chrome and 55 Chevys. I don't know, whatever.
There's a lot of traditional, you know, crash worthiness and operational safety to be put in mandatory standards. I mean, the engineers are working all over the world on this. I mean, it's really, when you look at the old braking systems and you move to semi-autonomous brakes, when you look at how much more effective at higher collisions airbags can be, when you look at how they're cushioning the side right. of the car and envelop. I mean, there's a lot of traditional, old-fashioned, adequately tested things that can reduce casualties and, I might add, reduce the crash in the first place.
Right.
I mean, a lot of bad highway situations. Look at New Jersey. I mean, a lot of bad highway situations.
Right. But there's also information that could be going, the continuous monitoring that could go in there and intervene in your throttle and your brake and not let you crawl up my butt when I'm driving there. And I like to argue, my goodness, my speedometer in my car says 160 miles an hour. I mean, where am I going to do 160 miles an hour in New Jersey?
Isn't Please, that crazy?
Auto, I mean, it's just crazy.
Yeah, they're selling what I call velocity fantasy.
Right.
By the way, in Europe and Asia, they're much more restrictive on the development of autonomous cars. I mean, they're very tough about allowing actual road testing up to this point.
Well, not just
so in the industry. Says, well, we got to keep going fast because we got to keep up with the global competition. Well, they're tougher in Asia and in Europe on this. Yeah. I think there's a lot of internal fear in the auto companies. I think they're on a fast track for the reasons just discussed with their competitors, and Silicon Valley is really pushing them much faster. But I think there's real dread that this thing is going to blow apart. As premature.
Well, if as you mentioned right at the beginning, if it blows apart as premature or anytime soon, it's going to kill the whole thing. Okay, because if we start not doing this right. There was even an article today, you know, that sort of came out that Waymo in Arizona, you know, some people are going out there and slashing tires and throwing, bricks through windows of these things because they don't like the intrusion. I mean, you know,
that's more public revolt than perception.
There's public revolt, perception out there. If these things don't do good, if they don't actually deliver safety, if they don't improve our mobility, if we really find them as an intrusion, all these folks out there chasing the supposed market, it's not going to be there, I don't think. I mean,
yeah, and every time there's a report that Facebook's leaked, hacked rather,
right?
And Google's been hacked, and
right.
Target stores have been hacked, and Equifax has been hacked,
and Marriott,
and they say,
Marriott.
And my car's going to be hacked? No way.
No way. Okay, so I mean, there's so we really, we do have to do this right. I mean, we just can't be, out there swashbuckling on the deck and being a loose cannon.
What about this, Alan? What about a sequence? You develop a sequence like a chain, and this is a technology that is prone to. It's only as good as its weakest chain.
Right.
Like hacking vulnerability, to develop a visual chain of all the steps that need to be taken. And in the meantime, installing semi-autonomous type things that are safe and more self-contained and not easily disrupted. And so people can see the bigger picture. And then the economists and the sociologists and the political sciences have to deal with things like how much are the states going to have. I mean, this bill in the Senate strips a lot of the state motor vehicle authority. And how about the unemployment? How about the conversion process? Because it's only as good as its weakest link. It's such an intricate technology that disrupts existing patterns, however inefficient and wasteful the existing patterns are. They're there. You know, they can't be wished away.
Let's do it.
That'll clarify it.
That helps. And clarity is really important here because certainly, as you've mentioned, there's all the Sunday supplement stuff out there of everybody trying to, get clicks or be able to say I'm ahead. And of course, that is leading a lot of folks to suggest, my goodness, let's be very careful here.
And, by the way, there's another fly in the ointment here. It's well known that for this to commercially work, the auto companies producing these vehicles have to have more and more control away from the driver, not just in the technology on four wheels. They have to deal with upgrades. They have to deal with recalls. They have to deal with monitoring data feedback. And all that is going to irritate, when it goes wrong especially, is going to irritate the drivers, just like that VW manipulation of the software on emission standards. So that's why this sequence is very, very important. And then the students in particular can look into this in an interdisciplinary manner that is something more than formalistic. And by the way, my niece, Rania Milleron, who's a PhD in the health area, with another colleague, just put out a book entitled Ethics, Politics, and Whistleblowing in Engineering, to try to get engineering students and practicing engineering to broaden their frame of reference and begin cranking this kind of important variable into their calculations at the earliest time. Because as you know, the earlier, the better. I mean, the engineers are the first responders. And the earlier they can anticipate these problems in fuller context, the quicker they're going to be resolved.
The ethics piece is absolutely fundamentally necessary. You know, in some sense, it's too easy to cheat. And people are going to go out there and cheat. My goodness, you can't do that. You can't do what Volkswagen did. Okay, that has to be. There are going to be crashes here. The thing that's important in the crashes is okay, let's learn from it. Maybe we weren't quite smart enough here, but let's at least learn from it. We've had this 737 crash recently in the Pacific. Oh my goodness! You know, you had two sensors that were supposed to be giving you the same result, but they weren't. Yet, the system didn't properly respond to the fact. Hey, one of them's got to be wrong because the same answer has to. We don't know which one, but my goodness, how can you go and automate an airplane? So, I mean. But
that raises the question of the limits of automation.
Well,
it's become extremely risky, extremely risky. Aviation has debated that.
Well,
but now it comes down to surface transportation vehicles.
Right. And in some sense, if we, you know, even now with respect to the way the Waymo's operating or the California regulations, if you're not going to have a driver in there and they're going to be empty, you at least have to have a pipe in there so that you can remotely monitor these things. And so that there's a operations center someplace so that there's some human oversight at some point so that as things, you know, begin to happen, at least you can pull the thing over to the side and summon a tow truck, AAA.
That's another loophole in the legislation. There's no real safety review. It's just, well, and it just says, send us your reviews.
Yeah, well, we've seen that.
Send us your nice brochures.
Yeah, no, if you've seen those, that's what they've looked like. They've looked like nice brochures, at least some of them. So for those that have even bothered to even send them to NHTSA, anyway.
The industry is not thinking other than this frenzied race, who's ahead on a certain day in a certain year, because they should want strong regulation. They should want publicly reviewed data, because let's say their competitors are engaging in shenanigans with secret data that they're misinterpreting for the public. Well, you know, that's an unfair method of competition.
Well,
they should want that. I think they're very worried. I think it's out of their control. I really say that about the auto industry.
Well,
I think it's out of their control.
I mean, what I've said is with respect to safety, they should not be competing on safety. They should be cooperating. If somebody trips over a problem, then they should be sharing the solution. If Boeing tripped over a problem because of the crash in the Pacific, they should share that with Airbus. The objective is to make the system – it's tough to be safe. and we should be working on it. It's not collusion. It's not, creating a monopoly or something like that.
They can share it through the Department of Transportation.
Or, whatever mechanism is, but sure. They really should be working together on safety. They shouldn't say, oh, my goodness, this is now my competitive edge. You know, I'm going to lead the others down the primrose path to some, mega calamity, but I know the answer of how to get around it. I mean, that's just ridiculous. So, that would probably take some legislation because collusion, antitrust, blah, blah, blah. You know, lawyers get in there and give you that one on that. Well, we can't cooperate because, anyway.
Yeah, that's what we wanted. We wanted that kind of mandatory reporting.
Yeah,
and it's just out of their own self-interest. They're not behaving rationally. They're in this frenzied race, and it's just out of control. There'll be a lot of insider memos and whistleblowing coming and industrial espionage accusations. In the meantime, we should spare some of our attention for upgrading existing operational and crashworthy standards in today's vehicles.
Absolutely.
And investing more in mass transit where, you need more mass transit in the East Coast than you need in the rural Missouri. And so we got to pay attention to that, especially for low income people. Like you say, here in Washington, low income people work in these fancy suburban houses cleaning them. They got to get up at 4:30 in the morning. Just to get there.
But that's a whole other topic. Ralph, it's so great to have you with us. It's nice to see that you're still completely enthusiastic about all of this stuff.
We started Princeton Project 55 to develop broad-based citizen graduates of Princeton so they can deal with these kinds of problems. And I think... I'm very proud of my classmates for doing that. And you should visit their headquarters. It's right off campus. They have 8 or 9 staff. They've renamed it Princeton Alumni Corps. And they've placed thousands of Princeton undergraduates and graduates in civic change groups all over the country and in some foreign countries. There's no class in the history of the United States that's done that.
Well, I shall go visit.
And Ralph, we're hoping that we can get you back on with us before long and maybe see you at a conference at Princeton before long.
Yes, I hope so, too.
We'll be sure to get you here May 15th or 16th for the third summit that we'll hold here on smart driving cars. Because we need to engage in the dialogue.
Ralph Nader, thank you so much for taking the time with us.
You're very welcome.
Well, don't know what to say after that, but we do have some other news to cover from the latest edition of the Smart Driving Car newsletter. First off, SAE International has released an updated visual chart for the levels of autonomous vehicles from 0 to 5. And I sense, Alan, that you're less than happy.
Of course I'm less than happy. My goodness, if they're going to continue with the levels, why do they continue to make it complicated and confusing? You know, level 0 is no automation. You don't need to bother with level 0. Okay, you have none. It's a 55 Chevy. Everybody understands that. And then level 5 continues to be everywhere and fully whatever, everywhere and at all times. Nothing is everywhere and at all times. That will never happen. And so why include that? I mean, that's useless. And what they then do is basically partitioned the view into 2 segments. One is individual sort of safety, what we call safe driving cars, and then they choose to have 2 levels there as to whether or not it's operating your throttle and your brake or your steering, and they're 2 different, or both. I mean, why not just use an and or there and have it be one? You know, these are fundamental controls, automated controls on the on the things that you can't control, which are throttle, brake, and steering, and doesn't say anything about taking your hands off the feet or off the wheel or feet off the pedals. It just makes sure that the kind of steering commands and brake and throttle commands don't have you plowing into the rear of a vehicle or getting out of the lane when you shouldn't be. Those are the safe driving cars. But what's even worse is on the other side, they actually make it so that it seems like they're level three and level four. It's just a simple evolution from one to the other, where they're fundamentally different. Three is self and four is driverless. Self requires a human oversight, period. That is completely different than driverless, which doesn't require human oversight. Now, whether or not you can just do this in your geofenced area in certain driving conditions, of course you can only do that in certain places. And that's separate. But what they do is underneath, they sort of indicate that, you know, those things are kind of an easy move from one to the other, an easy evolution. It's not. So darn it, SAE, go back to the drawing board again. They've taken a perspective that, in fact, these things are going to be personally owned vehicles. And they fail to recognize that driverless will not be personally owned. They because of the requirements that will be necessary for these vehicles to be safe, if there's no driver inside, they will at least for a very long time, they will only be available to fleets and responsible management systems. Consumer marketplace for this, no. And they failed to basically create a real difference in those levels, and they've got to go back to the drawing board, their new changes didn't improve anything, and possibly made it even worse.
Instead of clarifying, it went in the other direction.
Maybe it didn't go in the other direction. They certainly didn't make any advance in trying to make it so that, in fact, there is a really fundamental understanding that in level three, it has to have adult supervision. And level four, for it to be level four, it can't have adult supervision. Those are fundamentally different things. They're fundamentally different markets. They're fundamentally call them different levels. But make sure, don't color them the same color. Don't put a bar underneath it that basically indicates that, geez, well, you know, one or the other. I'm pure. I thought that they were going to make advances. Oh, my goodness. They didn't.
Well,
sorry.
Let's talk about one advance here, at least a bit of an advance. Columbus, Ohio now has a public self-driving shuttle.
Right. So, you know, in the shuttle business, they're out there. Looks like they've made it available to the public to use. They have an attendant on board, as we've, you know, decided. You know, it's okay to have an attendant on board in the beginning. Again, the objective is to make sure that we're safe. And that people are comfortable in there and they're not anxious. And then at some point, you know, after everything's working well and we are sure that it's safe, then you go to the next step and you remove the attendant. All right. And as the system grows, then that's going to allow the system to grow. You'll be able to use the attendant in the new places that you're going to expand service to. And so that's congratulations to Columbus.
Well, things seem to be going pretty well of late for Elon Musk and Tesla. He even showed up on 60 Minutes last weekend.
Yeah, had him on 60 Minutes, but poor Elon, you know, he just can't help himself because he's then overselling autopilot. I mean, he's there then trying to be like with the SAE thing. He thinks he has a really good SAE level 3 car. I mean, that basically does self-driving. But in everything that he has there, he's not going anywhere where you can begin to think about not having adult supervision on there all the time. Okay, and that's not the direction that he's taken it, and he shouldn't suggest that the steps that he's been taking is really in that direction. Yes, he can do intelligent cruise control. Yes, he can do lane changing. Yes, he can, and he's going to be able to understand the stop sign and stop. Okay. But still, the thing is not going. He's not going to limit the places that operates to a set of places where, in fact, you can have a human out of there, and that's not where he's taking it. And he may not even have the sensors on board that are going to allow him to do that at this point in time. And his AI isn't good enough, and he shouldn't be suggesting that it is. He's trying to sell cars to individuals. Okay, stay there. Don't try to build a vehicle for a fleet that a fleet operator is going to use to provide affordable mobility to the mobility disadvantaged and the economically disadvantaged. You know, that's not what you're doing. You're selling an expensive car to rich people. Continue to do that. You're doing a great job at.
Well, what would stand in the way of him expanding the concept into vans and providing that kind of public transportation and growing the technology?
Well,
I wouldn't mind, I guess.
I wouldn't mind him doing that, but he's going to have to put a lot more testing, a lot more, a lot better code in his technology, and he's going to have to really look at where this is operating and the geofenced area and in what conditions, and then really do that. And in some sense, the way Waymo has done it in Phoenix. You know, they've tested the hell out of it and decided that, yes, it works well enough in 5% area of Phoenix is, I think, what's been quoted. Great. Do that. But don't do it in a vehicle that you're trying to sell in Massachusetts and Florida and in Washington State and Illinois and Texas and California. You haven't done your homework to do that.
And while he's talked about possibly buying one of those GM factories that's closing, ARS Technica ran a story saying, well, why doesn't he just buy GM?
Yeah, I know. Well, I mean, you know, the marketplace has reacted. We let's wait and see how he does in the next quarter. And if it's profitable in this next report, quarterly report, he might just well go buy GM because my goodness, Wall Street tends to like him, and for good reason. I mean, he's really done. He's created a very good product. He's hyped it, but for a large part, it's achieved the hype. In a large part, except for this business of thinking that it can be driverless, and he should really back off and say, my goodness, we've really accomplished something here, and let's make sure that we continue to deliver on that one. The rest of it can take care of itself over time.
And finally, in the newsletter, you comment on a New York Times piece that talked about apps that are tracking us everywhere. Pretty scary stuff.
Well, yeah. I mean, when we first put Copilot on the market in 1997, one of the things that we did is that we, of course, captured the GPS tracks of the person that was using it. The reason we did it was so that we could debug it. So if the turn-by-turn navigation system didn't work, they could send us their GPS tracks and we could, figure out, well, why didn't it work? But I think that what is happening, 20 some years later is that any app can go in there and turn on your GPS receiver or your location finding system in your iPhone, and then sit there and basically just capture those data, and then every once in a while just upload it. And whether I guess they tell you about it in whatever you click to say, I accept. I mean, what are you going to do? You want this app for what it's going to do? Are you going to say, no, I don't accept? Of course you accept. Nobody reads that. And all of a sudden, buried somewhere in some fine print says, hey, I'm going to do that every once in a while. And guess what? Whew. They now know where you've been, you know, and since we're creatures of habit, I guess somebody uses that to figure out how they can, you know, get into your wallet and take your money. As I've suggested, maybe the only way around this is to maybe turn off the cellular phone and go back and get a landline and go back to copper. Whatever. Somebody watches what I do all day or all week, they're going to be really bored. Okay. Great. Have a ball with it. But, you know, it really is intrusive. And of course, the things that they pointed out in that and did it very well in terms of their presentation of information graphics and so on. I mean, you read that thing, you say, whoa, what is 1984? Here we are.
And very well written. That is it for this edition. We want to thank Ralph Nader for being here with us. After all of these decades, still such an important voice on this and in so many other areas as well.
Great to have him. It was a real pleasure.
You can find us at smartdrivingcar.com, now on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple, TuneIn, SoundCloud, Spreaker, and more. You can ask your smart speaker to play us too. You can find my tech reports at techstination.com. I'm Fred Fishkin along with Alan Kornhauser. Thank you for listening.